Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by EndocrinologyNetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on EndocrinologyNetwork.com. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. I am Diana Isaacs, and I am with the amazing Natalie Bellini. And today, what we want to talk about is a new agent for prevention of type 1 diabetes called teplizumab. And you heard me correctly, prevention of type 1 diabetes, which is unbelievable. So I can't wait to dive right in and to talk about this. So as we dive into this topic, let's just first quickly review the mechanism of action of teplizumab. So this is an anti-CD3 monoclonal antibody, a protein which is associated with the T cell receptor that is responsible for antigen recognition. The exact mechanism by how this works and exerts its immunosuppressive effects is not exactly known, although there are several mechanisms that have been proposed, which include the induction of energy or apoptosis of activated T cells, inactivation of T cells, and inhibition of apoptosis induction. The bottom line is that in early trials with animal studies, there was indication that this could actually delay or prevent type 1 diabetes. And so, Natalie, I want to turn it over to you. If you wouldn't mind sharing just kind of top level some of the clinical data in clinical trials of how this agent worked to prevent or delay type 1 diabetes.
Sure. So way back in 2019, actually, published in the New England Journal of Medicine was the initial result of the first large study that was done. And it was a two-phase randomized placebo-controlled double-blind trial, which is what we want when we want to prove if something really does work or not, right? We want to mask everybody. Nobody knew what they were getting. All the patients got either the drug or placebo. And this is an interesting thing. A patient needed to go in 14 days in a row and be infused with the drug or with the placebo. You and I have talked a little bit about that, and we will again later in the podcast about what that means to a patient and to a family member to have that done. And ultimately, the results showed that patients who got the drug actually were at very high risk of getting type 1 diabetes, first of all, right? So they already had the autoantibodies positive, at least two autoantibodies positive, and they were staged where when they were given glucose stimulation, right? When they were given high doses of glucose, their blood sugars went up. Okay. So were their fasting blood sugars high? No, they didn't have full outright type 1 diabetes, but they were at very high risk for getting it. So this was so that's what happened. And the patients that actually got the drug, their delayed onset of type 1 was on average 24 months.
Thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, I show the median time to clinical type 1 diabetes was approximately 5 years in the teplizumab treated patients compared to 2 years in the placebo group. And I'm curious, because some might look at that and say, well, they still got diabetes. Like, there was a difference, but I mean, is that clinically significant? So I'm really curious to hear your take on that.
So you and I talked about this back in earlier this year, actually. And I think that we have to remember that a delay is a delay, and a delay actually delays the cost of the disease and the onset of complications. And I think that if you are a parent of a child or you are an adult with type 1, because those people are the highest risk patients, right? So 1 in 300 people get type 1 right now. But if you have a parent or you have a child and you are the parent with type 1, you have a 1 in 30 of those patients gets type 1. So I think those people would look at this very differently than you might, who doesn't have type 1 in your family. So then you want to say, okay, what would 5 years buy you? What would 2 years buy you? What would a delay at all buy you? And then do you really want it? And then we could take it a step further and say, so if I could buy you a little bit of time and we could come up with another monoclonal antibody that would then buy you 10 more years, and now I've put off diabetes 10 or 15 or 20 years for you, then would you want it? And I think when you and I spoke about it back at the ADA, we were both kind of like, oh yeah, then maybe I would, right? What are we getting? What are we waiting for? And how long can we delay? And those are the do you do it, do you not do it kind of questions that we're all going to start asking ourselves about these new drugs.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because that was something I didn't think about, that, yeah, there could be a better therapy or an improved therapy in those years. And also, even though the average was 5 years, I mean, for some people, it delays it even longer. And we don't fully understand why some it may be less and some it may be longer. But the point is, you could be one of the lucky ones that is, you know, delays it even longer and longer, and then something new comes out. And so that's really key. The other interesting thing, though, is that like the majority of people, when they're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, it's in DKA, which can be a life-threatening event. And studies show that there's worse outcomes later on when that's how kind of you're diagnosed. And so I think by doing the screening and looking for the symptoms earlier on and being able to potentially prevent DKA is also really huge. And so I would say that also is really clinically significant as well.
I think so. And I think some of what we should, you know, spend just a couple minutes on at least is about the staging of type 1 diabetes, right? So in the past, we said you either had diabetes or you didn't have diabetes, right? And there really wasn't that was it, right? All of a sudden you ended up with very high blood sugars, weight loss, frequent thirst, urination, right? There wasn't a whole lot of screening. And now there is an actual staging that both the, but ADA even has some staging discussion in their guidelines, right? So first there's a genetic risk. So patients that get type 1 have a genetic risk for type 1 diabetes. So that's where it really does start. And then there is an immune activation. So there is a role of autoantibodies in the development of type 1. And during the immune activation, the immune system mistakenly attacks the cells in the pancreas. And that's it looks at those cells and says, these aren't good. And it attacks itself, right? That's an autoimmune disease, leading to the development of diabetes-related autoantibodies. And that's what we measure when we say, does this person have a higher risk? Oh, you have these autoantibodies. So you had a genetic risk. That was stage 1. Stage 2 was you developed autoantibodies. But in that stage, if we give you a glucose load, your blood sugars don't change. So you've got positive antibodies, but your glucose load doesn't change. And then in stage 2, we give you a glucose load, and then we see a rising of the blood sugars. Do you have overt type 1? No. Stage 3 is overt type 1 diabetes. So when we look at those three stages, when we screen to use an anti-CD3 monoclonal antibody, if we would treat that person, they would have stage 2, where they had the autoantibodies positive, and they'd have slightly elevated blood glucoses with glucose loads.
Yeah, thanks for describing that. So you're absolutely right. In the standards of care, they talk about the different stages, and there's also a couple of recommendations about screening. And I imagine these could change now that we have a drug that can actually be used to delay type 1 diabetes. Because in the past, it's like, yes, you can screen and be more aware and kind of pay closer attention, but without any action that you can take, it's kind of harder to justify the screening. So let me tell you what is currently in the standards. And that is a recommendation for screening pre-symptomatic type 1 using screening tests that detect for the autoantibodies, like the glutamic acid decarboxylase, the GAD, the islet antigen 2, or the zinc transporter. And that's recommended in the setting of a research study, is an option for first degree relatives or family members of someone with type 1 diabetes. And TrialNet is an example of where you can go and they can perform that kind of testing. And then they also say that development of and persistence of multiple islet autoantibodies is a risk factor for clinical diabetes and may serve as an indication for intervention in the setting of a clinical trial or screening for stage 2 type 1 diabetes. And that's where now, we have an agent that can actually be used. And I also I kind of want to talk more about the screening. So we have TrialNet. There's also JDRF has through their website that people can be screened for about $55. So that's not limited to family members. Anyone can be screened. And of course, we know that while type 1 diabetes can run in families, a lot of people that are diagnosed have no family history. And in fact, the rates of type 1 diabetes are increasing, and we don't exactly know why.
Exactly. And I think that that's someone who is concerned because they have other autoimmune diseases in their family. So my mom has Hashimoto's, my sister has lupus, those kinds of other autoantibody diseases where you can detect antibodies to other diseases might be someone that would decide that they want screening. I think JDRF will have the majority of people who have found their website, who choose to get screening done, will be family members of those with type 1 because they're at such higher risk, right? But it doesn't mean that anyone with an autoantibody or autoimmune disease also has a higher risk of getting other autoimmune diseases. And that's why in clinic, we screen for patients with type 1 for things like celiac disease and for adrenal, issues and for other things, because we know those run hand in hand, right? Thyroid disease. Hashimoto's thyroiditis, those run hand in hand with type 1, and those are all antibody positive diseases. So for someone who has a family member, my husband has a huge family full of type 1 patients. He has type 1 himself. His nephew has type 1. His older sister got type 1 at 50. His father and his uncle all had type 1. So this is a family that, took part in this TrialNet. Right? This is what they did. They all screened, and it was really important for them to know who else could be affected. But a lot of families don't have that. They have no one else. So when that first child or adult gets tested and is positive for type 1, there's a whole other way that we can now start looking at who has a higher risk and treat them and reduce the risks, not just of the daily maintenance and the hardships of having a disease like type 1 diabetes, but there's also these patients that have really early complications. And so if I can delay diabetes for 2, 5, 7, 10 years, am I reducing the long-term risk of complications, right? I think you and I see that where some patients get type 1 diabetes complications really early in life, even with management, intensive management of their diabetes, and other patients, they end up with no complications. There's some genetic protection somehow that we also truly don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Also, when type 1 diabetes develops in adults, it seems slower progressing and less likely that they're diagnosed in DKA, and often can be managed without meds for a little while or with less intensive meds. So yeah, if you can delay it by longer and longer, there's a lot of risks that could potentially be saved. I want to talk a little bit about teplizumab itself, if that's okay, because the way it's taken, it is not a pill. It is an infusion. The good news is that it's not forever. It's 14-day infusion. So each day, it's a short infusion, like 30 minutes to an hour, but it does have to be done 14 consecutive days, and then you're done. It's like a one and done, at least for now. That's how the dosing is. Natalie, what do you think about that? Any potential, I don't know, good, the bad, the ugly, any barriers to this type of...
Patients are people and they have mortgages to pay and jobs that aren't going to let them off of work. And this is going to be a bigger deal than for some people than others, right? And I think that's really... The hardest part about this is going to be some people are going to really struggle with doing something like that. And I think that as a clinician, my first thing is to say, we're going to use the Family Leave Act and get this taken care of for you so that we can do what we need to do to protect you and your family from the ravages of type 1 diabetes, right? This is the only thing we have to prevent it right now. So you and I as clinicians and a group of clinicians is going to have to come up with, how do we get patients to say, yes, this is important. And yes, this is, you know, something that is worth doing. Insurance coverage is going to be a challenge in the beginning as well.
Yeah. I mean, when I first heard, I just don't love venous things in the veins. But it is a short, finite time. It's 14 days. It's not forever. So when you think about the benefits, but I could see, I mean, so the idea, you know, this being approved in kids and adults, kids may be more likely to have an aversion to having this needle in them. But then again, if they develop diabetes, they're going to likely be dealing with lots of needles. So there is that benefit. I see some logistical challenges. So infusion sites will need to be open. Infusion centers will need to be open every day of the week to make sure there's not an interruption in care. You made a good point about the flexibility of hours. So kids don't have to miss school. People don't have to miss work. So offering early hours or later hours will be important. Mm-hmm. I am optimistic about the insurance coverage. So you're right. Like in the beginning, it's always having to get informed payers and get that coverage. The reason I'm optimistic is because when you think about the cost of diabetes and the insulin and the technology and just all the things, and then if someone does get hospitalized, that hospitalization can be very expensive. So I'm hopeful payers will see the cost benefit and will pay for this therapy.
I think you're right. I think that in the end, with the right discussion with the payers, I think we will be okay. You know, I think just like any other approval of a biologic, we're going to need some, it's going to take people like you and I and other clinicians who are willing to say, wait a minute, let's do this the right way. Let's protect this patient and get this done, to get coverage, but I think we will be able to do it. I think the 14 days, you know, I would give 14 days of my time up, right, to get this to work, right? So I think we have to think about patients and families and how do you get, you know, you're very averse to blood draws, right? Like I think you've probably had your blood drawn half the time you were supposed to do it, right? Or maybe even less, you know, and I think that if you have a child, how do you explain something like this to a child, right? You make it fun. You know, we've always talked about like diabetes bribery with a child. You say, okay, we do this and you get three M&Ms or you get ice cream or we get to go bowling or so every day after we're done this, we're going to read two books before bed instead of three, or we're going to, you know, you can pick your favorite dinner for tonight or whatever time, you know, that you are going to help your child, because they won't understand it, right? Kids will not understand it. But you still do it because it's the right thing to do for them. And even for adults, right? Even when we say, I tell adults all the time, you diabetes shouldn't be an excuse. It should be, but when you come to the doctor for the day, take the day off if you can and do something wonderful for yourself, right? It's that same idea. When you're done this last infusion, do something wonderful for yourself or your family and celebrate that you've done everything you can.
So as we're talking about teplizumab, I want to make sure we do discuss some of the adverse effects. So of course, this is an infusion. There can be infusion site reactions. Overall, this actually was pretty well tolerated, but there were some dermatologic skin reactions, effects on blood or bone marrow. The most common one was some lymphopenia, just meaning a reduction in the lymphocytes, which resolved by 90 days or 84 days later, usually came back up to normal. Any more you want to mention, Natalie?
The other very common thing was a spontaneously resolving rash, which means it shows up and resolves on its own, right? In about 36% of the participants who received the drug, but the rates of infection were similar, right? So the rates of infection, whether you got the placebo or not, that's because we broke the skin. right? So those are the two big ones.
Great. So the last area I want to discuss is, well, what will the role of the healthcare professionals, specifically diabetes care and education specialists, what with this new drug out there, what do we see the role, maybe in terms of screening? Like what do you see the role as?
So I think the data on 1 in 30 is a big deal. And I think we as clinicians need to talk about, you know, we didn't talk about it much because there wasn't anything to do about it. And now that there is an answer, we need to be at the forefront of discussions. So you're an adult with type 1. Do you have family with diabetes? What's going on? Where are you? Are you interested in screening your children? They can call or go onto the JDRF website and order a kit and screen. And then if they do come up positive, I'm happy to see them and we can discuss treatment. I think that it's not going to be able to be left to endocrinology. I don't know about you, but my wait list is long. So I think that we're going to have to bring in primary care to this rollout of prevention of type 1. So I think that that's going to be a big part of it too, is saying, okay, we did the screening. We encouraged your family member to do this because of this. Let's now work on this to get this done, because to wait for a consult with an endo is going to take a long time. And now you know they're positive and you know that they are at stage 2, let's say, or stage 1. How do we get them infused quickly enough to prevent the diet? You can't wait 6 months, right? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for diabetes care and education specialists, because you're right. Like the key is this cannot be limited to endo. Also, in thinking about the screening, a lot of times this is going to be family members or people with other autoimmune conditions, and they're probably not, they may not be seeing an endo. And so how do we access those people? And so that's where I think like internal medicine, primary care, we've got to be screening through that pathway. And the good news is we do have diabetes care and education specialists in a variety of settings, so they can really take the lead about the screening. But I also think just a lot of education to other members on the healthcare team that if it is positive, if there are multiple autoantibodies present or even one, what do you do from there? Who can you refer to? When do you wait and see versus when do you start teplizumab? And so we've got to make it easy for people and to know where they can refer to be able to get this new exciting drug so that they can get this treatment, and also having someone to talk to, I guess I would imagine it would be a big decision to decide, am I going to do this? Am I not going to not? And who can have that discussion and everything.
Right. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. You know, does someone go to talk to someone about this long-term? I think there are going to be patients who'd say, I want this right now, right? There are patients who really do. And then there's a lot of patients who go, well, you know, there's not zero risk and there's not, you know, there's other things, or my life is really busy and, you know, I don't want to know, right? There's a lot of people who have even a child with type 1 that have never screened their other children through TrialNet. In the early days, we only had TrialNet. We didn't have JDRF, who you could pay $55 to and get these screenings done. And people didn't want to know. I remember having discussions with family members about that. They said, well, if they're going to get it, they're going to get it. But now the discussion's very different, right? If they're going to get it, maybe they won't get it if we do this infusion, right? So I think that the whole conversation is going to change. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of screening because I would want to know, but to your point, yeah, some people don't. And then if it's a negative screening, meaning let's say there's no autoantibodies present, yes, that can give some peace of mind, but it doesn't mean that you're safe forever. Those autoantibodies can develop later on. So it is, I mean, it's going to take some work to get people to increase screening. And I think the first step is just letting people know the options. Also, it can be ordered through, a lot of insurance plans are covering the screenings too. So it can be ordered that way, but just making sure people are comfortable, are aware of that. I would say screening is really the first step, because until you're screened, then you don't even know if you have the risk or not.
Exactly. I think that that's where we're going to start this, and that's where we start the discussion, right? I think it's an exciting time for...
So exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's things in diabetes treatment and options this is the first prevention opportunity out there right now, right? For type 1 diabetes. This is a really, really big deal. Yeah.
Right. And it's not like this is just, I mean, this area has been studied for years and years and years. Multiple companies, researchers have been trying to find a cure or a way to prevent. And this is the first drug that's really come to fruition. So it is tremendously exciting. And to put it in perspective, I saw something, I know I shared it with you, Natalie. I was very, very excited today to see that Medtronic 7-day infusion set was FDA approved. So that's great. That's exciting and everything, right? But it still means somebody has to wear the infusion set. They still have to change it every 7 days. They're still having to wear a pump. They're still having to give themselves insulin and make all the decisions that a person with diabetes has to make throughout the day. So yes, that's great. But wouldn't it be even greater if the person didn't have diabetes altogether? So for me, that just like really put that in perspective.
That's it, right? That patient still has highs and lows. That patient still struggles. That patient still has to think about everything they're going to do, you know? So World Diabetes Day was November 14th, and this is Diabetes Month. And we think about diabetes, but patients with diabetes think about their diabetes a lot, right? Every time they want to go to exercise, every time they eat, every time their body changes, they have illness, they're under stress, they're hydrated, they're dehydrated. There's so many decisions. If we could take this away for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line, I would do it to every patient I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that perspective. I am so excited to have a new therapy, and I hope this is just the beginning, but we have a lot of work to do on education about screening. I know a lot of people don't even know that there's multiple stages of type 1 diabetes. So we definitely have our work cut out for us, but I'm so, so excited. So I want to thank everyone for attending this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, and we hope to see you next time.